Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of November 2022. Welcome to episode 90 of this podcast series. The concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comic books I've read since the last time we had one of these brief chats, which should make this, more or less, all the comics I read during November. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost those on my Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those, but those posts are not spoilers for the podcast, since those are just lists. But here, there's a little more review, a little more critique, a little more discussion. But first, a little feedback. We start with a quick comment from across the pond, from Sir Martin of Grey. Hi, Alan. Thanks for another rollicking roundup of reading. Dark Ark sounds a hoot. The high concept is brilliant and so obvious in retrospect. And the spooky Archie books with tales featuring non-regulars is something I must seek out. Best, Martin. And Chris, from Professor Frenzy, which rumor has it is a show, referred to the UFO flying saucer issue. Ah, the Pascagoula alien abduction event. Exactly, Chris. Exactly. Dr. Ange agreed that it sounded like a good month. I am a fan of horror comics, devouring all the anthologies as a kid. Probably explains a lot. So glad to hear House of Mystery was covered. Chaykin on an Archie book sounds crazy, but then I heard it wasn't his take on that universe. I could only imagine what Betty and Veronica would be written by him. You know, Ange, between you and me, I'm guessing that you have imagined that. I think everyone knew the Flashpoint universe was going to be meaningless, although somehow Geoff Johns keeps bringing it back. I didn't get The Outsider. I actually enjoyed the Project Superman, Gene Ha bringing a Dragon Ball Z-style art to the proceedings, but the Lois Lane and the Resistance, and Shade the Changing Man, those both disappointed. And glad to hear you're reading more Secret Society of Supervillains. My man the Creeper is there. And Shane Kelly gave a one-word review of the episode. Woo! Thank you, Shane. Social media support for that prior episode came from Matt Moore, Vic and Phoenix, David Ace Gutierrez, Karen from Between the Pages, James from Karen, Pat Sampson of the Long Box Crusade, Clinton Robison from The Days of High Adventure, which really needs a new episode soon, Clinton. Just saying. Christopher Willett, Jeremiah the Notorious, JJG, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Chris Lydon 7, Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, Scrap Iron Jaw, Drew from Comics for Fun and Profit, The Telltale Mind, Chris Dunford, and Billy D, a.k.a. Doc Strange, from the Magazines and Monsters podcast feed. So now, on to the books I read last month. And as we do on this show, we're going to categorize or classify these books. And first are the issues I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. And for Quarterbin 188, for December's Holiday Comics Month episode, I read Fantastic Four 361, A Story About Christmas, Yancey Street, and Doctor Doom. And for December's Doom Speak, I read Astonishing Tales number 1, half of which featured Kazar, Zabu really, being tracked down by Kraven the Hunter. And of course, the other half of the issue, starring the rightful ruler of Latveria, that's the one I'll be talking about on the upcoming Doomspeak. And yes, you're correct. It does indeed sound like a doomtastic December is upon us. Yes. Yes, it does. And those comics I read to listen along with podcasts. There are certainly a good number of these most months. Thank you, DC Infinite App, and thank you, DC Comics-themed podcasters. On a couple issues of Feathers and Foes, Laurel, a.k.a. Mountain Flower, and her crew covered Black Canary Oracle Birds of Prey and Black Canary Oracle Revolution, both from a series of supersized one-shots written by the excellent Chuck Dixon. To listen along with a new episode of the Batman Family Reunion podcast, I read Batman Family 11, featuring a wedding story of Batgirl and Robin. Oh my. And for episodes 10, 11, and 12 of Billy D's new podcast, The Brave and the Bob. I read Brave and the Bold 75, 82, and 126. 75 was an insane story about the Chinese Year of the Bat. And 126 and 82 both featured Aquaman, although 126 added both Nazis and commies to the mix. So wild, so Haney. And on to the general comic reading that I did, and we start with the new comics right off the shelves, digital shelves, and we have some more from Hoopla. A couple of which are from Boom, which releases comics, or at least some titles, within a week or two, usually after the physical comes out. So this month I read Something is Killing the Children 26, in which Erica Slaughter's recovering from a run-in with a big bad monster, and just as she is not quite ready to continue her duties to protect the young girl she has run across, the woman dispatched to kill her, the woman Cutter, has just arrived in town. This confrontation has taken a while to arrive. It has been teased for a number of issues, but it seems, maybe, next issue, we may have that promised battle royale on our hands. And also from the same world, the House of Slaughter 10, which told the story in an interesting way. The first half or so of the issue featured kids around a campfire telling the very scary story of, well, of the House of Slaughter. And we get an interesting visual at the end of a new monster that has implications for the story going forward. And overall, I'm still very meh on this title. And then from Image, a current series that I've heard good things about, 8 Billion Genies, 1 through 4, about what happens when all at once every person in the world gets a genie and gets one wish. And the world is changed forever. Very interesting stuff, well done, and some potential darkness to light content in there about human nature and in-depth, thoughtful stuff like that. A highly recommended series. And then on to the back issues and other comics I read. I really like coverless comics because what they do is really expand the potential inventory of what you can find in cheap bins, such as the 33-cent box at Carolina Comics and more, because coverless is the only way I could find in the wild a copy of Star Wars 12 from 1978 at a price I'm willing to pay. Luke has been dispatched to find a new location for a Rebel Alliance base, and he ends up finding a water world and a pirate ship. It's not a bad in-between story, with Han having a subplot, and Princess Leia also getting a shout-out. From a location of half-price books that I don't get to that often, but when I went there last month, there were two long boxes on a table just outside the store, priced, oh, happy day, at 25 cents each. Boom! From that box, I read a handful, including Olivia Twist, number 4, a four-part series set in a vaguely steampunk-ish dystopian future with orphans and work homes. And yes, it is all a take on or a pastiche of Oliver Twist. And not bad. Also, Sharkman number 2, a futuristic story involving a questionable undersea casino and undersea body-modded thieves. And that's right, sharks. And Fathom, Dawn of War number 1 from Michael Turner's Aspen Comics from 2004, written by J.T. Krull. I've not read anything in the Fathom world, so there are contents and situations that I'm unfamiliar with, but the fantasy-like setting, the underwater battles, the creatures and characters, I could see how someone could be a big fan of this world, of these titles and characters. Kirk Spencer sent some books a while back that were from Kickstarter, and one series I picked because they looked like war books, but Rum Road 1 through 4 are actually more crime books with a hint of steampunk. In this alternate history world during Prohibition, speakeasies did not open up behind hidden doors in big cities, but in the skies as blimp-based businesses. And when the local police raid, it involves biplanes and dogfights, which is where I got the idea that these were war books. But they were, in fact, solid, professional, entertaining crime and police stories. Very enjoyable. And from Tom Panarese, a book that he recently picked up at Baltimore Comic Con and had signed for me by the creator, Mike Grell. Thank you, Tom. I read the excellent John Sable Freelance number 1, in which we meet the freelance mercenary, who is also a popular children's author. In this one-off adventure, he saves President Reagan from an assassination attempt. Great creator, great character, great story, great issue. And from Hoopla, the next volume of a crime series I've been reading, Postal 17 through 20, the hidden town of Eden, Wyoming, is on the verge of becoming known. A pesky FBI agent from the outside discovers some of the origin story of the town's founder, as do we. And in the town, in the aftermath of the big battles of the last trade, we get a lot of character work with Mark the Postman with Asperger's, including the three ladies in his life. All four of them, the three ladies and Mark, appear in one scene, and gunfire ensues, because that's what happens when the three ladies in your life get together. Altogether, this was a slow series of issues, but that really worked because of the character work and the sense of foreboding, the sense of dread. I think the first series went 25 issues, so I imagine I will wrap up my reading of this in a month or two or three. And the next trade. In another series I started last year, Miles Morales 7 through 10, from the 2018 series written by Saladin Ahmed. This is a nice mix of action with Miles' family, with his extended family, and with his extended spider family. For two of these issues, he was captured by the Assessor and studied like a bug under glass. Not sure if that will come up in later issues of this title or if that was related to a Marvel storyline at that moment, but those were strange stories. But there's an entire lightness to the Miles title and approachability to this that are necessary in any telling of any Spider-Man character. So overall, I thought that this was not great, but pretty solid. And another series I started just last month, Witchblade 7 through 12. Alex used her power as the Witchblade to defeat a demon's attack on New York City. And here, she battles a woman who wants the artifact to be put into the vessel of her choosing. And at the very end, we get the arrival of something called the Shadow Blade. Good characters, again, good story, lots of action right when it was needed. Because there was also a lot of talking when it was needed. A little bit more snark than I prefer, but overall, like the first trade, not knowing what to expect whatsoever from this character, from this title, from this storyline, I found it surprisingly, again, enjoyable. And from Hoopla, the series that writer Chris Cantwell went to after his wonderful run on Doctor Doom, Iron Man 1-5, the 2020 volume. In this one, Tony finds himself on the bad side of public opinion, a situation he is not used to. He and the Wasp go their own ways, mostly, I'm guessing, because Cantwell wanted to tell a story about Tony and Patsy Walker. And that is totally what this is. Tony and Hellcat, along with a few C and D listers in the last few issues, going up against Korvac. They definitely seem a little overmatched, and in the next volume, I suppose, we'll learn how all that went. Good stuff. And the writer, Chris Cantwell, is definitely touching on some of the same issues of doubt and identity that he focused on in the Doom series. It took me a few years to forgive Cantwell for dumping Doom for Tony, but I've gotten over that, and I am glad that I read this. It was quite good. From Hoopla, again, Star Wars Bounty Hunters 1-5, in which Bossk and Valance and Boba Fett, once allies but no longer, are all going after a huge prize in the world of bounty hunting. Their history makes them adversaries, but circumstances may force them into a tentative and tenuous alliance. I like the Star Wars world, especially when the Skywalkers and the Jedi and the Force are more in the background, and when characters like this and plots like this come to the fore. And I hope very much that I will remember to read more of this title in January when hashtag Sci-Fi Comics Month rolls around again. And I do not remember where I got Aztec Ace number 1 from, but I found it a strange, confusing time travel history story written by Doug Mensch. I tend to like genre blending stories, but there wasn't anything here that I could really grab onto. I feel like there was something there. It's a well-thought-of title, from what I understand, but I think it's me. I think I just wasn't getting it. And then we've got the kids' books for this month. A lot from Pulp Reality, some from Sir Rob Lance. I read Betty and Veronica, issues 1 and 2 from 1987. Betty and Veronica Double Digest 8 and 224. She's Josie 3. Sad Sack Laugh Special 8. Josie 44. Richie Rich Diamonds 39. Treasure Chest of Fun and Fact, Volume 10, Issues 4, 7, and 17. And Uncle Scrooge 106 and 161. The story from She's Josie was interesting. It was a full length, swinging 60s story featuring a shopping spree that ends up with Josie and the gals becoming involved in a diamond smuggling operation. Because, of course. Treasure Chest continues to be a weird combo of features that actually kind of appeal to me. A combination of U.S. history, a lot of Revolutionary War stuff, boys' adventure stories, and religious, specifically Catholic, instruction and tales. And of course, the Uncle Scrooge comic contains solid, more than solid, very good, adventurous types of stories. Issue 106 has a great one where Scrooge needs to get away from the financial cares and stresses of the modern world and flies with the ducks to the hidden land of Tra-la-la. But he introduces the concept of money to that land by accident, and things go poorly from there. Actually, it's a great take on the collector and speculator mentality, as bottle caps become the most sought-after item in the land. And as with all speculator bubbles, be it tulips, pogs, beanie babies, sports cards, comic books, NFTs, crypto, or bottle caps in tra-la-la, the market for such things always crashes. Let that be a lesson. So that makes this the time to take a break, play a promo, and when we get back, it'll be time to get into our hashtag War Comics Month reading.
Are you tired of fanboy comics podcasts? Looking for a show that really appreciates the comic storytelling medium and how it works? A show that looks at comics from any genre and anywhere in the world, comparing the storytelling techniques of different creators and different comics cultures, with manga, newspaper strips, European comics, and more discussed alongside mainstream U.S. comics? A show that includes talks with well-known creators like James Robinson and Dan Jurgens, and with less famous creators that you really should know. And hey, we'll even critique your comic. If you're looking for that show, then you're looking for Deconstructing Comics, and it's right here at deconstructingcomics.com. Also available in iTunes and on Stitcher. This is Tim saying check out our show every Monday. That's Deconstructing Comics.
And we're back to talk about seasonal reading, which for November, of course, makes this hashtag War Comics Month. And a shout out here must be made to Sir Luke Giaconetti, who a number of years ago founded this hashtag, which over the years has grown very large in its own right, and then eventually ballooned to become the 12 months of comic reading hashtags. But it all started right here with war books during November. These were acquired from a variety of sources, and I'll do my best to identify those sources as I go. So in approximately alphabetical order, we have, and I do not have anything from Archie Comics this go-round. Last year, I read Archie 1941, by the way, and I do recommend that. But in terms of what I read this year, none from Archie, but a few nonfiction comics from Capstone. Nancy Wake, Fearless Spy of World War II, and True Stories of World War I. These are all short, comic-length, 32-page issues. I enjoyed Nancy Wake, the story of a New Zealander who went to college in England in the 1930s, married a Frenchman, and watched the Nazis come to power. She ended up a member of the resistance, first passing messages, and then eventually doing more dangerous infiltration work. There was tragedy all around her, of course, but she survived the war, winning awards from France, England, and the U.S. before passing away just over a decade ago at the ripe old age of 98. The True Stories book is a collection of 7 stories, 2 to 5 pages each, about various bits of the Great War, including the sinking of the Lusitania and the exploits of the Red Baron. All of these capstone books would be great additions to classrooms and school libraries, which is where they were intended to be sold, I imagine. And from the public domain, one of my favorite characters, one of my favorite DC Comics characters, but these issues are from Quality Comics. This is Blackhawk 22 through 27, which I read from the Digital Comics Museum, my go-to source for public domain comics. There's a nice mix in these issues of international espionage action, major police operations, and I'm not making this up, the occasional interstellar incursion. That's right. The Blackhawk team fights at least 2 separate alien groups in these issues, and that I was not expecting. One thing worth mentioning about these issues is that every story in here, even the text pieces, were Blackhawk or Blackhawk related. That's not always the case with anthology books. But in these ones, there were no unrelated backup stories, you know, filling out the page counts. All Black Hawk, all the time. Now, with many books from this era, late 40s, we do have to make a comment about one other thing that stands out and not in the good way. And it's especially jarring because these are all very realistic, quote-unquote, comic books. Every character, the situations, they visually seem to be grounded, to be not exaggerated. And then you get the Chop Chop. And it's hard to ignore because there's a Chop Chop solo story in each one of these issues. I knew he was bad. I'd heard he was bad. But I was not prepared. It is bad. And in a world where nothing else visually is exaggerated or cartoony or over the top, it completely stands out. So if you seek these issues out, be warned. And from Charlton, which are among Kirk Spencer's favorite sources for war books, we have Fightin' Army 112 from 1973. Two pretty good stories, and one great story. That great one, the day Smitty joined the war, tells the story of a draftee with a reputation for goofing off who ends up separated from his crew. He actually got lost, but then figures out how to stop a German advance and alert his company of his position, saving many lives. And to be fair to another branch, Fightin' Marines 170. The book was published in 1983, although all of the stories were originally from the mid-60s. Lots of shorter stories, including a one-pager, which you hardly see outside of kids' books or hostess ads. And from one of the great all-time DC war titles, G.I. Combat, 87, 166, 251, 252, and 270. This selection included the first appearance of the Haunted Tank. That one was reprinted in the DC Goes to War collection. And some of these are the expanded Dollar Comics size, which are always a treat, especially when you get them for 50 cents. Those ones had a second Haunted Tank story, as well as some good stories from the OSS and the Mercenaries. My favorite Haunted Tank story among these was the one where Jeb's team was broken up and spread out to other tank teams, but not for long. Interesting to note that at least three of the stories in these very widely, you know, disconnected issues had to do with the process of soldiers taking souvenirs from defeated enemies, and the gray nature of that practice is explored. And from IDW, when they had gotten the license in 2008, G.I. Joe Zero, Kirk Spencer, sent me this one. Thank you, buddy. This was a preview type of book with six or seven pages from three different stories, which would then lead into three separate G.I. Joe books coming from IDW. These were good. Written by Larry Hama, of course. Chuck Dixon, excellent, and Christos Gage. Excellent writers. Of course, Hama is the G.I. Joe veteran, and Dixon is great at any action or war scenario. And then picking up from where the Marvel run left off when it continued at IDW, with Hama in charge, G.I. Joe 155 and a half, which is what they called their first issue, to 165. When we start, the Joes have been dissolved, and Cobra has been brought in as a government contractor. I know what could go wrong, and who could see a large government bureaucracy making such a questionable choice as that. But over the course of these issues, things do begin to be set to rights. I did not read the Marvel book, so these characters and situations are, apart from geek osmosis, kind of blind spot for me. But here, we get a wide cast of characters like Dr. Mindbender and the Baroness, Destro and Zartan, all working under Cobra Commander to blow the Joe's secret base to bits. And when some of the good guys head to Storm Shadow's location to blow it to bits, we get a couple of issues of All Out Modern Warfare. If that's what you're looking for, I think this is the title that gives it solid, solid stuff. And this next one I didn't actually buy as a war book, but if you stretch the definition of military sci-fi, this one almost sort of counts. Well, it counts enough for this month. This is Halcyon, number one from Dark Horse. This is the story of an armed revolution on the space colony of Halcyon, which is referred to in the book as Halcyon, hence the name of the title. The locals don't appreciate the brutal government, and in response to the uprising, Earth is sending troops to quash the nascent independence movement. Interesting story, with some elements reminiscent of the U.S. fight for independence against Martin Gray. From Renegade Press, Kilgore, number one from 1987, we have a novel-length, black-and-white story, Thundering Guns of the Golden Gate, about a Japanese submarine attack on San Francisco. But mostly it's about Colonel Kilgore, a rascally officer who is in the military game more for himself than for the greater mission. And although his rascalness leads him to take heroic actions sort of accidentally, which just annoys his superiors to no end. It's a strange vibe, a sort of lighthearted war book. But that is pretty much what this was. And a comic that Tom Panarese sent me recently, and when I say what it was, you'll say, of course that was Tom. The Nom 41, which features Cap, Iron Man, and Thor. Well, not really, of course, because they were not in the Vietnam War. And that's actually the point of this story, the theme, was that it can be discouraging to be a comic book reader when you realize that the issues of the real world, like the Vietnam War, could not actually be solved by comic book heroes or even Hollywood heroes. Really good issue, thought-provoking as the Nom often was. And a few issues of the classic DC title, Our Fighting Forces 102 and 164. The latter of these was the one I preferred, a cool loser's story, and a really good backup starring the peg-legged loser Captain Storm. That one also had one of my favorite Hostess ads of all time, Shazam, in the cupcake caper. Then we head over to Marvel, where, to be honest, they don't have as deep a bench as DC does. But what they lack in quantity, they make up for in quality, because they do have one of the best ever. And over the years, I've collected a decent amount of this title from cheap bins, and some sent in by Kirk Spencer and Mike Lane. Sergeant Fury 8, 16, 28, 29, 63, 96, 107, and 120. What I like most about this title is that the Howlers can be anywhere and anytime within the World War II context. In these issues, we go all over North Africa and Europe, battling Baron Strucker and other ratsies. This batch included the introduction of Percy, whose umbrella came in handy more than once. The most memorable story was probably in issue 96, The Ravaged Land, an issue focusing on Dum-Dum, and ending with a splash page of, Mein Gott, what is mankind coming to? Also worth mentioning is the story that introduced Dino Minnelli's old buddy. And since Minnelli was a take on Dean Martin, his old buddy is, of course, an analog for Jerry Lewis. Except that in this version, Jerry is a gung-ho commando, doing anything and everything to take out as many enemies as he can single-handedly. Because he is stricken with cancer, and before he dies, which, spoilers, he does on the last page, he wants to take out as many Nazis as possible. Which he does throughout the whole issue. And a story focusing on Hitler's reliance on the occult and horoscopes in developing his war plans. The Shadow, 1941, by a terrific team of creators, Denny O'Neill, Mike Kaluda, and Russ Heath. Like I said, a terrific team of creators. Good story. Shadow has his whole team at work, and we go globetrotting to infiltrate the German high command. And yes, Shadow does make good use of a pair of lead-flinging handguns. A fun bit of historical fiction. And another classic DC War title, Star Spangled War Stories, 87, 183, and 204. And then after it changed its name to Unknown Soldier, 242 and 256. Most of these issues featured the Unknown Soldier as the lead story. And a couple of those were very good. But the story in 87 was epic, featuring the glamorous Parisian battle doll, Mademoiselle Marie. In this one, she rescues a town full of people who've been held captive by the Germans simply to draw her out and make her surrender. But things don't follow that plan. Issue 256 is also just as good, a lead story in which the soldier wakes up in a hospital to learn that the Americans have surrendered and Hitler has defeated Britain. And if that wasn't intense enough, we also get a seven-pager about the Bataan Death March. That was an Unknown Soldier 256. Excellent comic, even though that first story was a to-be-continued. And then a one-shot from Future's End, which I got for one shiny dime from World's Greatest Comics back in the day when they occasionally had dime sales. Star-Spangled War Stories featuring G.I. Zombie. Not a bad one-shot featuring some exciting zombie-on-zombie action. And if you're reading war books, there is no better book to read than War, issue 11 from Charlton. Does what it says on the tin. Solid stories with an interesting one featuring a Construction Corps member. I am pretty sure I accidentally left this one behind in the Hardys in Obetz. That was a few weeks ago, but if you're passing through Central Ohio sometime, stop by and maybe it will be there. I mean, maybe. In addition to hashtag War Comics Month, November, of course, also includes the heart of the National Football League season. Brings us to Pep Digital 179, Archie's Touchdown Tales. This was strange because there are a lot of football-related Archie stories, but this was one of these shorter digital collections, maybe 70 pages, where they normally run well over 100. That being said, these were all good stories. My favorite one was when a lady coach took over temporarily. But another one had a great metatextual aspect to it, where Archie wanted to practice his field goal kicking, but Veronica kept pulling the ball away, not wanting him to kick her delicate fingers. And the punchline was Betty comforting him, saying that maybe he could end up like that Charlie guy and star in his own comic strip. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, like I said, Unknown Soldier 256 was terrific. G.I. Joe was fun. 8 Billion Genies is a really good series. Uncle Scrooge 106 was very enjoyable. But in terms of my absolute favorite, partially because it was signed, and partially because it was sent in by a buddy, and mostly because it's a great first issue, John Sable Freelance, number one, my favorite read of the month. Next month, I'm not sure what I'm going to be reading other than some issues for hashtag Holiday Comics Month. And just to please Dr. Ange, I really need to get back on that Secret Society of Supervillains bandwagon. But other than that, who knows? But whatever I do end up reading, I'll be here to talk about the books that I read during December and some thoughts on what I read all year long. That episode I'm usually able to get out on New Year's Eve. Feel free to let me know what you think of this episode, what you think of any of these books that I mentioned. You can send that feedback via email at relativelygeeky@gmail.com or as a comment on the Facebook and blog post for the episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek. And of course, we have our own Facebook page as well. Come join us. Here, all are welcome. Thanks for listening, and keep the pages turning.